It's not gonna be easy.
What's easy is floating downstream.
What's easy is being like everyone else.
You were made to stand out.
You were put here for a reason.
Normal isn't working anymore.
Look around.
Look around at the people who are giving you advice.
Do they have the results you're looking for?
I'm proposing a radical change.
It's time to fight.
It's time to fight the current.
Hello, this is Danny Campisi, and welcome to the Fight the Current podcast. I'm joined in the studio today with my co-host, best friend, and business partner, Aaron Thomas. Today, we're also joined by Joe McMaster. Joe is a serial adventurer with events ranging from biking across the United States to thru-hiking the Appalachian Trail. Joe is a true inspiration, and he will change your perspective on what is possible when you set your mind to it.
All right, guys, episode 8 of the Fight the Current podcast. We are so excited to have such a unique guest on today's show. Please help me in welcoming Joe McMaster. Joe, welcome to the show. We're super excited to have you on.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Welcome, Joe. Welcome.
So basically, I just want to go ahead and jump right in. So just so that our listeners know, this is going to be an awesome adventure podcast. Joe, you've done some crazy stuff, from triathlons to Ironmans to hiking the AT. Can you just go in and go ahead and list some of the craziest things that you've ever done, the craziest adventures that you've done in your life?
Oh, well, going to triathlons, one thing led to another. The Escape from Alcatraz, Ironman Canada, which ended up being a 12.5-hour event. It hasn't been that far, but hey, this kind of stuff led to some bicycle rides. We did a Frederick to Sarasota, Florida bike ride, 1,134 miles in 8 days. I ended up getting inspired by another runner who was hiking the AT. He only hiked half of it, but you know what? He inspired me to hike the whole thing. So in 2005, I hiked the whole thing. And then after that, it's like multi-month activities were just kind of something I was happy to do. I biked cross country from Portland, Oregon to Bar Harbor, Maine. That was about 2 months and 4,600 miles. And it got a little tougher to quit your job and go at this point, but hey, I got some of them great adventures behind me. Then all of a sudden, I start like biking uphill. I did some of the great climbs in the United States. The Mount Washington Hill climb is 5,000-foot climb in 7.5 miles. I did the Mount Evans Hill climb, 29 miles up to 14,000 feet. And just 2 years ago, I did one in Maui from sea level to 10,000 feet. You can never say the name of that volcano, right? And now that I've biked up things, now I'm going around things. I did a paddleboard race around Key West a couple years ago also. Coming up in 2 weeks, I'm doing a paddleboard race around New York City.
That's awesome.
The Sea Paddle New York. So, yeah. So, you just figure out a different agenda, and it's a great way to see the world, by bike, by paddle, pedal, running, whatever you're doing. Just get out of that car and ski thing.
That's awesome, Joe. So how'd you get into this stuff, man? I know a lot of people listen to this, including myself, are just thinking, first of all, how the heck do you have time to do that? But what's the mindset behind it? Like, what drives you?
What does drive? How did I get into this stuff? I guess basically it kind of all started back in the Army days where I learned to run, and then I learned that I like to travel. And, it kind of led to some of them things. So learning to run was kind of a start for it. Some guy got me riding bicycle a little further. And, I came back from doing time in Louisiana and, good old drinking days, And this time, basically what happened is in 95, 96, 90, I think it was the end of 95, I came back and I was, came back from California after making my boozing rounds around the country, and it's time to straighten my life out. And I said, that's when I started doing the triathlons. My friend John Coachman, he kind of geared me away and got me off the white refined sugar and alcohol and stuff like that. And once I did all that, once I got my body working right, oh, the energy was unbelievable, And I was just bouncing all over the place. So, and you would end up using your bicycle not just as for recreation, but you use your bicycle as a tool and as your mode of transportation. And then all of a sudden, it just seems like you're just always in motion, and somehow you can just stay in motion doing it. I figured I was kind of like a generator, whereas, you know, the more I did, the more energy I created. You know, I'd always say the more you do, the more you can do. So, and basically sometimes you'd ride your bike to work and run home, or ride the bike, stop at the gym and swim. So it's not, you know, you just, you got out of the car, it meant a lot. You know, that car brings you down a little bit.
That's awesome, Joe. That's awesome. So when you say about how you just, you were in motion, you stayed in motion. How old are you, Joe? You're not your typical, like, when we talk about adventure, typically people think of, oh, you're a young millennial, or typically when you get over that hump of over the hill, if you're 40 or 50, like, you tend to go downhill with your activity and your fitness. So how old are you? How are you keeping moving? How are you staying in motion?
I am 53 right now.
Okay.
And how am I staying in motion? You know what? We talk about this with a lot of other guys who could try to do the same thing. And it's like, we just learned that sometimes, I know I'm not as fast as I was in my 30s. They were some spectacular days, but recovery is what you got to take into consideration much more than ever, that the body just gets tighter. You may take a couple more days for recovery. You know, just maybe don't expect so much. I think that's when I changed the nature of my sport, because I went as far as I could in the triathlon world up to like 2004. And then paddling seems to be something you do accommodates the body the best. You know, running may not be as fluent as it used to be. So that's when I discovered the kayak, canoe, marathon canoeing. Oh, I also did a 70-mile canoe race too on it. And so, so that was also quite an accomplishment. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, you just change the nature of your activities for whatever your body can accommodate that one time. You know, one time I hurt my Achilles, I couldn't run. So you know what? Instead of running to the gym, I unicycled to the gym. You know, you just do what you, you do.
You unicycled to the gym?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, that's normal, right?
Did you juggle while you did it?
Right. Are you a clown?
Well, that's a particular skill I don't have. I should have started this. I started unicycling when I was about 10 years old, and I just kind of enjoyed doing it. I like uphill unicycling because it's safe. I also do sports that are safe. That's how I stay injury free that way. It only sucks up my energy a little bit, you know? So we did King's Gap time trial. That's a 3.5-mile uphill, and instead of taking a bicycle, I unicycled it.
I can't even imagine unicycling up a hill.
Unicycling.
Seems impossible to me.
What's funny is that you see people in the unicycle world, and once again, if you get into it and see some of the records people have for unicycling and how far they unicycle, and that Mount Washington hill climb that has grades of like I think a 12 to 18 and finishes at 22%, people unicycle that. I still consider myself just average for that kind of stuff, because there's some really exceptional people doing this stuff, you know? What the King's Gap time trial was only like a 3 to 5% grade. It's very mild, you know? So the unicycling up that wasn't all that bad. And you know what? I did it on the bicycle, it was about 11 minutes, and I think I was only twice the time on the unicycle. It fit, I think, 21, 22 minutes. So it wasn't even that much slower without gears.
So what advice would you give people that if they do want to be adventurous, but I know a lot of us, we tend to let life get in the way of pursuing these adventurous things. We might have the excuses of, oh, I have work, I can't. To your point, when you hiked the AT, you took off work for 5 months. What kind of recommendations, what kind of advice would you give people that they want to do these adventures, but they have all these obstacles standing in their way? If it's a job, if it's family matters, things like that.
You know what? I've been very fortunate in the way, not really fortunate, but it seemed to set my life up in a way that basically what I do only impacts me, other than the influence I might have on others or something like that. You know, it's like without a family and without a you know, wife and kids. I mean, I have family, you know, mother, sister. The supporting role around me was very important at that time. And then at that time, I went and did a truck driving job, you know. So you take a truck driving career, and, you know, you can pretty much quit and get rehired. I got quit and rehired by the same company twice, you know. But and you're also able to put the money away to do something like that. You also make sure that you're not overextended in life. You know, if you're not, make sure that you're not being overwhelmed by a house payment, a car payment, stuff like that. I lived very simply. I rent very cheap, you know. My lifestyle was really very basic, except for the toys that I had to buy. I mean, that seems to be priority. There's some people who seem to, you know, be able to have a lot of these other things, but basically I minimized. There was somebody who said, you know, basically one of the main meals on the Appalachian Trail was ramen noodles because of their expense. You know, they're 10 cents a meal, I guess, or something like that, six. And he says he would eat ramen noodles half a year so he could eat ramen noodles the other half a year on the trail. He was, you know, he committed his, and this is people, and there are people that go and they hike these trails and do things year after year. The guy who wrote the Appalachian Trail guidebook, a guy named Wingfoot, I talked to him when he was about going to get his book, and he says his expenses at the time, his living expenses, were $5,000 a year. So you just got to prioritize, you know? And you don't have to do it all in one big motion, you know? You don't have to quit and do 6 months of it, you know? Seriously, I find that there's section hikers and there's through hikers. Through hikers do it all one time. Section hikers, they do it 2 weeks at a time. So you never really find your groove in that week. So if you want to spend, you know, you meet a lot of people who are actually just section hiking. They say, well, I got this 1 week section here. And I think they're more persistent than somebody like me who just quit and did it all at one time. It's like the guy who continues to return on vacation, take his 2 weeks vacation, hike the trail bit piece by piece. That's a real commitment to me, you know, because you got to figure out logistics and everything like that. Me, I just had to get dropped off down in Georgia and picked up in Maine. Simple as that. And got somebody to send me my food, you know?
Wow. That's so cool, Joe. I know that Aaron and I have done pieces of the Appalachian Trail, and I've done them, you know, even without Aaron, but I can never imagine finding the time and or making the time, to your point, Joe. So that's a weakness or a blind spot in my own mind to be able to do the whole thing. But I guess I would say, because I know a lot of people listen to this, love hiking as much as I do. What was that like? What was it like to hike through the whole Appalachian Trail?
What was it like? Well, let me tell you, I put it into four different emotional sections. Basically, the first month was, the days were pretty short because we started about March 20th, and the energy was spectacular, you know, because you have the 2,000 people that start down at, whatever the mountain that is down there, Springer Mountain, Amicacola Falls. And so you basically every night, you know, you have about 10, 12 people into the shelter, and it, you know, it gets dark kind of early. So we're all just kind of laying around in our sleeping bags, telling jokes and stuff like that, you know, but your days were just a bunch of laughter, a bunch of good energy. But the first quarter, you know, it's like every, about 10 o'clock every day, I would just kind of smile and say, and because it felt like I was in control of life because I was able to quit my job and go do this. So that was basically
said,
just.
You said 10 o'clock. You're talking about 10 a.m. or 10 p.m.?
10 a.m. You know, when I broke down camp, came out of the shelter, and, you know, like I said, I just, that morning, I just kind of smiled because yeah, it just felt good. It's like you're in control of life. You quit your job, and you're hiking. You know, you're just doing what you want to do.
Right. That's you so know? Cool. So that man. Was the,
yeah. And that was about the first month. The second month, the days were getting longer. Once you get out of the Carolinas, and the whole state from, I guess, North Carolina, from Manassas, Virginia, maybe, or the southern part of Virginia, up to the halfway point, I did like 634 miles in a month or something like that. And, you know, if you're hiking 20 miles a day, it's smooth. And all of a sudden you get emotional. You say, well, you know what? I'm feeling good. I think I can do this, you know? And this is when it starts to be real, that you're really becoming, this is becoming efficient, you know, efficient and something that you could do. And then the third quarter was Boiling Springs up to the Green Mountains in Vermont. You know, you think you're going through Jersey and it's getting a little bit old, you know, you're thinking, you know, but I'll deal with that. And the second quarter, you're hiking into familiars. The third quarter, I was hiking away from familiars. It was all kind of new stuff. I've been some of these places, but it was, but you're just thinking it's getting old. But, you know, you think as soon as you get to Vermont and New Hampshire, the White Mountains and Maine, you're just going to get a new energy and it's going to get spectacular. Let me tell you, it just got old. You got the hills, you're going straight up over the mountains. It's not quite the energy. You're spread out. You get tired. You get absolutely tired of trying to figure out where you're going to have to eat, where you're going to sleep. I got to a hostel in Maine, and it said, call us for a ride. We'll be there. No, and, you know, the haul us back to the hostel where my food drop was, and nobody's there. It's like I had to, you know, hustle and bustle just to catch a ride to the hostel, and then my food drop wasn't there anyway. It's like, wow, you know. So you get a little tired of that stuff, you know. The knees are hurting, the bottom of the feet, or you're feeling it, you can't walk barefoot anymore. I mean, it's not a death march in any way, but it's certainly not the normal comforts of life, I can tell you that.
It may not be as glorious as it's made out to be, but I think you'd probably agree it when you finish it, it's extremely rewarding, right?
Well, it took a while. Yeah, you're right. It's not as glorious as it turned out to be. And this is the way it is with, I guess, any of life's major challenges. You get to the point where when you finish, maybe you're just tired and you're not going to do this again, you know, but then after you get done, then all of a sudden it sinks in. And it took about a month and a half before my knees stopped hurting and my, and I could walk barefoot, you know, they followed me in the newspaper too. So I really had a really commitment to finish the whole thing. To me, hiking Georgia to Maine, once I hit Maine, I was good. You know, I covered the East Coast, but it wasn't until about a month and a half before it sunk in and started really getting like emotional. I was like, this was great.
That's so awesome.
You know, now you get me choked up a little bit on it, because it's still, this is the one thing about some of these adventures, is they can still have an emotional effect on you, even we're talking 13 years later.
Hey guys, we hope that you're enjoying this episode and conversation with Joe. We just wanted to take this opportunity and make you guys aware that we are putting in a lot more effort to our social media sites so that we can go ahead and have that engagement and that interaction with you guys. We truly do value your feedback and your comments and your recommendations, and we just want to make that open space that we can have that conversation with you. So with that, go ahead, jump over to our Instagram page. We're going to be posting every single episode that we produce over there, along with links in the bio. Also, the conversation, keep the conversation going on Facebook, along with giving us a review on iTunes.
Yeah, and with that being said, if you do give us a review on iTunes, we're actually going to give you a shout out on the next episode. So if you're listening to this, and this is episode 8, on episode 9, your whole review as well as your name will be shared and we'll give you a shout out. So we want to make that as a challenge to you, and we are excited to read the review, and we're excited to let the rest of our listeners hear your review on our next episode, episode 9.
Awesome. Now back to the conversation with Joe.
you know, just choke you up a little, make you think about what you've done.
So let's dive in there, Joe. What makes you emotional about it? Like, what about it makes you feel this way? Because I can hear you getting, you know, like you said, it makes you emotional, but what is that? What's under there?
What does that? It's just the feeling that, you know, how many people try it, you know, there's just many other things that get way emotional, even on my bike ride and stuff like that, that when I talk about it, I get choked up. That the Escape from Alcatraz was one of the great ones. And it's like, I read in a book, Body, Mind, and Sport, where people say they never really push themselves to the limit and stuff, like most people don't. And I guess when you push yourself to the limit, maybe doing some things, maybe to me, the hiking was out of my comfort zone. I did not like hiking before, and I still don't like hiking. But I guess the fact that you accomplished one of life's great bucket list adventures, you know, I wasn't just going through the motion. It was truly a rush most of the time, you know. Just the things that I saw and just everything, you know, the people, the experiences, just the fact that you walked 2,500 miles to 2,174 miles. I guess that's what's emotional about it, you know. Maybe some of us are that way, that we just get a little emotional over these things.
Was there ever a point, I know that you mentioned about how you didn't do the risky sports, but was there ever a time in your life where kind of physical injury or something got in your way of doing these adventures that you kind of felt there was a gap, that now you're injured, you can't go out and pursue these adventures that you did all your life, and that's kind of how you found your purpose or how you got your sense of being alive? Was there ever a time when injury stepped in the way or job circumstances stepped in the way that you weren't able to pursue these adventures?
You know, it's funny because, well, sometimes I wonder if it's job business or if it's just aging that slows you down a little bit, where you're not quite the efficient athlete that you used to be, you know? I guess what it does happen, you know, when I did the Hawaii thing, I said, you know what, I'm 50, you know, when I was 50 when I set that up, and I did it when I was 50, and I said, you know what, I better do this before, for some reason, I can't do it anymore. But no, I wouldn't say nothing really gets in the way. You just change the nature of what you want to do. Not only does the job get in the way, the drive changes, you know. I don't ride my bicycle as much as I used to. I still prefer to hit the water, you know. That's the way that seems to work out.
That's cool.
Yeah, you just adjust as you go, right? If you can't run anymore, you start biking, or if you can't bike, you start swimming, or you know what I mean? I've heard you say that, and I think that's really cool. You just keep pushing yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was a time when I guess the money wasn't quite right for the trail, and I think I delayed that a year or something. I have to think. And I said, well, you know, I'll just make sure. I guess the one thing you got to do is make sure that you stay focused on it, even though you've had one setback, maybe a financial setback on one thing. And I think that happened when I went to a commercial dive school, just work in the Gulf of Mexico in the commercial diving business. That maybe my plans were delayed by 1 year, but for some reason you just stay focused on what you need to do, you know. My brother and I are now talking about going to Kilimanjaro, you know, and that should be about a $10,000 trip and quite a commitment to going to Africa. That's going to take me up to an elevational peak of 19,000 feet, a little over 19,000. So, but that's just a hike. That's a hike that most people can do. It's just a matter of committing to it. So now we got to have both him and me, and I think our cousin Megan wants to join too because she knows some people over there. And hopefully we're just going to do what we have to do to stay in shape to be ready for that and make the financial commitment. You know what? Don't worry about putting away for the future. You can put away for the future a little bit, but you know, I'm really believe that if you don't do this stuff while you're young and capable of doing it, it's going to be harder once you get into your 60s or 70s, because too many people try to do this stuff when they retire. That's the one thing I'm going to say. Don't wait till you retire to live life. You live life while you guys are both in great shape yet too, right? You're both 20s?
Yep.
20, yeah, 26 yeah. and so, 21.
Okay, 26 and 21. And that's what I'm going to tell people is do it while you still can. And when you can, not only while you still can, while you can enjoy it to its fullest, because when you're young and efficient, that's when you're going to get the most out of some of these things, some of these adventures, you know, that's when it's going to feel good. I've seen hiking the AT. I've seen some older people that guys were in their, you know, mid-60s and trying to keep up with the young guys at the beginning of the trail. But I also saw some 70-year-olds at the end of the trail that were still moving along pretty well, you know. Hmm. And a trip to Lake Erie recently, I met a guy, he was from Japan, and he was 69 biking cross-country. He said that's his last tour, his life, and it sounds like he's been to Thailand, stuff like that. He done a lot of touring. He was Japanese. He was definitely a hard accent. He didn't understand English very well. But he said at 69, that was his last tour. And I don't believe it, because he was still in great shape. So he was in control of life and able to keep doing it, you know? So yeah, that's all I would say is do it while you're young, do it while you can enjoy it. And when you start when you're young, let's face it, my base for this stuff is pretty spectacular in the way of, you know, I know what it takes to stay moving 10 hours, whether it's biking, paddling or something. I haven't paddled for 10 hours, but you know, it's 6 hours is like the longest.
Wow.
So, you just got to know what it takes to keep on moving.
That's cool. It sounds like from all your stories that you have that there's such a strong community and such unique and diverse people that you kind of meet along the way of these adventures. Can you kind of just touch a little bit about what the community means to you? I'm sure you have a lot of buddies or friends that you do these adventures with, and I'm sure there's a distinct camaraderie that comes with doing these adventures, spending time on the AT with all these people who are spending time over biking across the country. So can you kind of touch on what the community aspect of paddling or kayaking, paddleboarding, bike riding, hiking, all of that? What does that community mean to you?
I'm going to start by saying that I do most of my stuff kind of solo anyway.
Okay.
I'm not really a team guy where, you know, when I hike the AT, it's like I'm going solo. When I bike cross country, it was solo, you know, but it doesn't mean that I'm not part of the community. You know, we all can give each other a little guidance and stuff along the way. When I needed a new bicycle tire coming in the Adirondacks, and somehow I ran into a guy. He had an old Schwabe tire, super heavy, and he put some miles on it, and he gave me a tire to help me get on its way, you know. I would do the same thing for people like that. We ended up meeting some rookies that my parents picked me up, and we stopped in Salem, Massachusetts, and I met some guys that were going to, they were starting in Massachusetts and heading west. So I gave them some of my handlebar bag to get them started, you know, and tell them, you know, maybe give them a little advice or something along the way. The community is pretty spectacular. I mean, maybe I don't know these people or run into these people again, but, you know, when I see an AT hiker out there and he's got his thumb out, he's getting a ride. A couple years ago, I took one from Dillsburg the whole way to Gettysburg, you know. I didn't just take him. I went out of my way to make sure he went where he needed to go, you know.
It's really cool, Joe.
a couple months ago, even a guy out running, Tom, I can't remember Tom's last name, but he saw me. I was broken down on my my racing bicycle, and he went and he ran back to his house, got in his SUV and picked me up and hauled me back. And you know, it's like, you know, and so basically we do that kind of stuff for each other. It's just whether it's the local community helping people bicycling, or maybe giving stand-up paddleboard tips to somebody who needs a little paddling, you know, paddling advice, getting them started. Because most of all, the community is a whole lot bigger. These people that are active and getting out there. But I always tell people, the more your efficient your equipment is, the more motivated you're probably going to go to do this stuff, and the more you're efficient you are at it. You know, you have one building block, and you know, my friend Steph, she was working on just paddling the length of Pinchot, or you know, and all of a sudden, you know, I got her onto a more efficient board, more efficient paddle with a more efficient paddle stroke. And just the other day, she says, "Wow, it was just so effortless." You know, I went out and it was so effortless, and we're getting into some choppy water racing. And so, you know, we all pass on the basically in the community, we pass on advice and try to get everybody else enjoying as much as you do, or maybe they're trying to get me to enjoy it as much as they do, or something like that. You know, it's like, yeah, everybody just shares little tips and recovery, fueling, whatever it is. It's a great community. It's it's out there. You know, you get into the running world, you get into the triathlon world, and you just meet people that they just do more. The more you travel, the more you're going to meet people who travel more than you. The more activities you do, you're going to meet more people that do stuff. I met a guy. He had a melanoma. It was pretty extreme. It affected his knees and everything like that. It turned out that he paddled the Mississippi with his wife, biked across the country with his son, and then he was hiking the AT with his dog. This is a guy that doesn't stop, you know. So, that's kind of an inspiration, huh?
Just to be clear, when you say paddle, you're talking paddle boarding?
No, probably canoeing. Canoeing and kayaking.
Okay, gotcha. I wasn't sure about that. Okay. So, when you're talking about the girl with the lake, one of your friends, you're talking about paddling across the lake, like as far as canoeing. Or kayaking.
Oh yeah, well no, this was Steph. She's into the paddleboarding world.
Oh, paddleboarding. Okay.
So she started with a kayak, a little recreational kayak, and in the 2 years I've known her, she's moved up to a paddleboard, and then all of a sudden, a more efficient like a race board and a more efficient paddle, and all of a sudden, you know, she's just expanding her limits. You know.
Gotcha.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know if you should ever say expanding your limits, because people like to say there are no limits, but there still are limits, you know. But you just got to make progress in what you do, you know.
And I know you had said when you do these adventures, you do them a lot by yourself. I'm just curious, are you a natural loner, or have you always been that way, or is that just the way you like to do them?
Oh, you know what? If you're social and outgoing, you're never alone. You know, I can the McMaster family, we're blessed with the ability to just up and talk to anybody.
I can tell that from this conversation. That's true. You're such a likable guy, Joe. This is the first time we've had a conversation and I'm like, I want to know this guy. I want to know him more. And I know beyond the shadow of a doubt, the people who listen to this are feeling the same way. Like, this guy's a cool guy.
Well, thank you very much. It's part of my upbringing, I guess. The mom and dad, you know, they gave me the gift of gab and the laughter, and all you got to do is laugh and be happy. And be, maybe they never told us not to talk to strangers when we were kids.
That could be it.
Yeah. I think that's one of the worst things you can tell people is don't talk to strangers. Man, the strangers got new stories, new experiences, you know? The strangers might have something to share with you.
That's true. You're right, Joe. You're right. And if you don't get out of your comfort zone, you never get to experience it. Well, I got a big question for you, Joe, because one thing that here's a really good quote. It's by Jeffrey Rasley. And what it talks about is people who run to adventure, and really the quote was talking about people who hike and going to the mountains. But the quote is, people who run to adventure are either chasing angels or running from demons. When I first heard that quote, I was like, that is so true.
They're chasing angels or what?
Chasing angels or running from demons. And what I mean by that is you're either running towards something great or you're running from something you really don't want. So tell me, first of all, how that quote strikes you. Because I remember when I heard it for the first time, it sounded like they say truth is sweet to the ears. It sounded like truth to me. I was like, that makes sense. But let me know what you think of that, and do you find yourself relating to either side of that?
People find spirituality in many things. So I find spirituality in my sport, in my activities. So in that case, and when you, basically one of the things most important is if you want to put you got to put the good stuff in your life to get all the bad stuff out. So I would have to say chasing angels. It's just, we're after a great feeling. I'm certainly not running from anything. I've never heard that quote, but you know what, when I put all this positive in my life, I don't have any negative in my life. You know, I got away from the booze and, you know, smoking, stuff like that. So maybe in a way I would, I'm just going to say I put the positive in my life.
I think that's an awesome point. And I think that the quote to me didn't strike me as a spiritual thing or a religious thing. It just kind of just is like psychology, where sometimes when people are running towards those things.
You say spiritual is like a psychology thing.
Yeah, well, and when I'm talking about like this quote, like I don't see it as a religious or a spiritual thing per se, more just you're running towards, like you said, angels and or this feeling you get and good and great, amazing things, or you're running away. Because I know I've studied people and read books about people who've just pursued things sort of almost as a fear, like they're scared of their life or they're scared of responsibility or things like that. So I think it's really cool the way you answered that, because you talked about how you're mostly motivated running towards chasing angels in the example, but running towards awesome things.
And running towards, running towards what? Yeah. Absolutely. So yeah, we're running towards angels. Absolutely.
That's great, Joe.
Awesome, Joe. Well, we're going to wrap up here. We truly appreciate your time here, Joe. But in closing, we do have a couple more questions. First, the nature of our podcast is Fight the Current. I think you, without a doubt, exemplify what it means to fight the current in your adventures. You're doing things that the average human being doesn't even pursue or even think of pursuing, for that matter. So, what to you does it mean to fight the current? What does it mean to kind of go against society trends to pursue these adventures and these crazy cross-country multi-month trips?
What does it mean to go against it? I don't consider myself even being a nonconformist in that way. I just work my job to do this stuff. It is a little out of the norm. But I don't consider it way bizarre. But I guess I've been doing this long enough that I guess everybody else might consider it way bizarre, but I don't consider it out of the norm.
People definitely do. Let me just get one thing straight. It is bizarre. It's awesome, but it's very above average. It's very, very rare. And that's why we wanted you to be on the podcast. But just know that it's definitely super rare, the stuff you do, man.
Yeah.
the fact that some people might not even bike 20 miles and you're doing cross country 4,000 mile trips on a bike.
Yeah, Maryland to Florida, right?
Well, the Maryland to Florida was 1,134 miles in 8 days. That was like an MS-150 every day, is the way my friend Brian Wetcher said that. So.
Wow, 150 miles a day?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we had a long of 170 miles.
Okay.
But then I, you know, because I see this, and I see races like the Race Across America, where people ride 3,000 miles in 8 days in their race. Their commitment, their pursuit of being out of the norm, you know? And these are people that they're riding 350 miles a day. So I still consider my accomplishments rather average.
Well, I love your humility, Joe. It's definitely inspiring and cool to hear. Because you're far from average, but I appreciate it.
I guess that's the one thing that kind of keeps me driving is I just got to stay above average, you know? Nowadays in the paddleboard world, I got to finish in the top 30-25%, you know, if I in the top 10% in the triathlon days, I was in the top 10%, and I guess I am somehow looking to stay above average.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, that's obvious just in the things you're saying, and you are an inspiration. What you're saying has motivated me to do more things as well, and just to take care of my health more, and just to be able to do these things, and also to do them early enough in life that I can enjoy them. You know, sometimes people wait till the retirement years and or the golden years, and they get to the golden years, but there's no gold there, and they have a lot of regrets.
Oh, no, that hurts.
So they have a lot of regrets, so you got to take the time, like you said, while you're young. I think that's great advice. So the final question we have for you, Joe, and maybe you can answer this, maybe you can't answer this, based on your, you know, your interaction with social media and things like that. But how can the people listening to this podcast follow what you're doing? I can imagine that people listening to this are like, oh, I want to talk to Joe. I want to know how Joe got to do this. How did he take the time? How much money did it take to do the Appalachian Trail? How did he bike across the country? Like what gear you need, everything. So how do people listening to this follow you, continue to follow you, and learn from you?
You know, I'm not a social media guy in any way. People know that. I'm social, not social media.
And, I like it. So you're saying is you're actually social.
I'm actually social. But what I'm going to say is not necessarily me. I mean, I'm not the final word on how you do a lot of these things. If you want to bike across country, strangely enough, you see somebody out there with some touring bags or something like that, you somehow maybe offer them an apple, I'll say, can I help you with something? And all of a sudden you just strike up a conversation with them. If you're out in a trail area and you see some people with some packs. And it doesn't necessarily have to be on the AT. There's people hiking the Mason-Dixon Trail up through Franklintown. And I just had a little quick chit-chat with them, you know. You just got to see the people that you're doing, maybe that are doing what you're doing. Maybe to follow me, you just have to see me on the lake or see me out and about and be willing to say, hey, Joe, how you doing? And, you know, what's this gear all about, you know? And then I'll tell you about all that, you know. I don't know who or where I'm going to inspire somebody, but you know what? Somewhere along the line, you just don't know. You know, another paddleboarder recently bought a kind of a surfboard, Patrick, on the lake the other day, and I says, "Well, you know what? Maybe we've got you want to get into some races. Here's the number. We'll get in touch." And you know, so yeah, there's not any way to follow me other than kind of be where I am.
That's cool, Joe. No, I appreciate that so much about you, that it's not necessarily the social media, but it's actually getting out there and being social and having the conversation. And I think that all goes back to the community is to your point, if you see some people riding some bikes and they have those touring bags on, offer them an apple, offer them some water, and just like you said, try to get that conversation. And that's what I appreciate about you, Joe, is I remember having cookouts at my grandparents and you would be riding by on your bike. And actually, I remember when myself and my sister, we actually went up to Pincho Lake with you and you taught us how to paddleboard. And that was a great experience. I remember us being out on the lake and we were trying to do some headstands on the paddleboard, and you're just so willing and so giving to offer your tips and tricks and your support. And that I really respect and appreciate that about you, Joe, is that you're not just someone who posts on social media, but you're actually there for the people that you want to help them get their goals and accomplish these tasks. That if they do want to paddle, if they do want to kind of dabble in the hiking world, that you offer that support and you show them the gear that they need and give them advice. So I think that's a great point.
Yeah. Well, no, I just like you appreciate somebody sharing it with you, I appreciate somebody who wants to share, wants to get involved. Maybe that makes this mean even a little more to me that I'm doing something that people really want to do. And people want to do, improve at, or, you know, just have fun at, you know. We want to, let's face it, only 10% of the people go out and enjoy the outdoors, you know, and I want to see 50% of them out there enjoying the outdoors.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So if you had to sum up your advice to people listening to this in about a sentence or two, what would you say?
Just get started. Just get started. One thing leads to another. And you know, any project that you, I find that, you know, there's, I don't like house projects. I don't like working on the car. But I find that once you get going, once you get started at it, it comes a whole lot easier than you really think it's going to. Somehow it works out. You figure it out. It's that, you know, the most overwhelming part is just getting started.
That's great. Awesome, Joe. Well, thank you so much for your time. It's been an awesome interview. And we appreciate it, and we look forward to staying in touch and just continuing to follow your journey in person.
Right on, and I appreciate the opportunity to share my past with me, because I still get fired up about this stuff, you can tell.
Absolutely, and you know? We can tell you're passionate about it, and your passion has leapt across the microphone into my heart, so I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, you got to get in touch, and I'll get you out paddleboarding here, too.
That sounds
good. I'll get
you
out on a race board, something that feels good here.
Sounds good, Joe. Well, thanks for being on.
Okay, thanks for having me. I'll talk to you another day.
Yep, thanks, Joe. Take care. Yep. We appreciate it.
Yep, enjoy life. Right on, brother. Take care.
You've been listening to the Fight the Current podcast, your guide for living an extraordinary life in an ordinary world. We ask that you subscribe and review this podcast, as it helps out a lot. We sincerely hope that you've gotten value from today, and if so, we would love to hear from you. Check out our Facebook and Instagram pages and give us a shout out. Keep posted for our upcoming episodes, and until next time, swim upstream and fight the current.